Welcome to our DC Diversity Dive. It's a podcast in which our diversity and inclusion team aim to recognise and support cultural practices and celebrations. By recognising and supporting these occasions, which are an important part of many people's lives and well-being, we help to enable an inclusive and diverse environment in which everyone can thrive regardless of their race, culture or background. In today's episode, we have come together to recognise Time to Talk Day. Time to Talk Day is an annual initiative orchestrated by mental health organisations to champion open conversations around mental health. The primary objective is to diminish the stigma often associated with mental health issues by fostering discussions that promote understanding and support among individuals. This observance takes place in various countries and is an opportunity for communities to come together, learn, and support one another in their journey towards better mental well-being. Today, we look to discuss some of the more difficult topics and how to embody our value of Be Courageous with our guest speakers, Daniel Ramirez, who is a managing consultant, Grant Carroll, who is a director in our consulting business, and Mike Robertson, who is UK head of consulting. Mike, if I can ask you, why is mental health advocacy significant to you personally? And how did you become involved in promoting open discussions about mental well-being?
As a topic, mental health challenges is becoming such an increasingly prevalent and prominent part of our society in general. And it touches on all aspects, right? Whether it's broader society, family environments, friend environments, working environments. And it impacts us all in different ways and different sizes. And it's so important to try and learn and understand the challenges that we're all facing and trying to reach some sort of understanding as to what those triggers can be and how people seek the right level of support to deal with those challenges. I think mental health advocacy is essential, right, in promoting understanding, whether it's reducing stigma, whether it's just simply ensuring that individuals with mental health challenges receive the support and services that they need. And so as a society, as a group of colleagues, I just feel it's incredibly important that we all play a role in this. So whether it's just supporting individuals, when advocacy does provide support, so whether it's people who are at risk, vulnerable, or some sort of diminished capacity, that advocacy really helps individuals understand the services that are available to them and ensuring that service providers can recognize and put in place a plan to be able to support people. It gives people a voice. So it allows people to express their views and what's important to them and the challenges that they may be facing and help making in more informed views around information which can help them. It can also really change perceptions. And I think this is such an important thing to remove stigmas and change perceptions around this concept of mental health. And it allows an opportunity to break down some of those barriers and reduce the concerns or burdens or stigmas which are associated with mental health issues. And all of those things, I think, like you say, are all important to all of us. And each of us will have to be faced with each of those points at some point in our careers and our lives. And the more that we can do as a group of colleagues to understand and embrace that, it will help many along the way.
Thank you, Mike. And Grant, what are your thoughts on this question?
I totally agree with a number of the points, and I think that from my point of view that there's such an emphasis on reducing stigma and discrimination and to lower both the social sort of and corporate barriers that exist still regarding mental health. I think that obviously enforcing and enabling and providing people with that space, opportunity and forum in which that can obviously be discussed, addressed and supported is really, really key. And I think that through my own personal experiences in terms of mental well-being and the benefits that I've achieved as a result of having the confidence not only in my sort of, you know, environment and my colleagues, as well as sort of my own personal abilities to express and discuss how I feel, has really led me to become heavily involved in an advocate for mental well-being in the workplace.
Thank you. Many people spend a significant portion of their time at work. So how can workplaces foster an environment that encourages open conversations about mental health? Danny, I direct that question to you.
Yes, exactly. It is the place that we spend the most. If you think about it, it's the first space. So I don't know if you've heard the gym third space. I think it makes reference to you spend your most of the time at home is your first space. Your second space is your workplace. And then your third space is hopefully that place that you go to exercise, workout, or so on. But I think the first space is actually the workplace because we spend the majority of our day there. If not, we spend an hour or two commuting to work and thinking about getting there. And even when we work from home, our mental space is at work, right? So yes, the workplace being the main space or first space, I think that employers need to create a culture of openness. And this will begin from top down because this then permeates the culture around. It begins with things like a mental health policy and an EAP, so employee assistance program, but it certainly cannot be left just at that. I think that that is just the bare minimum. Now, once you have that, you need to start expanding into things like mental health training. I know that at DC, some of us are certified mental health first aiders. And I think there's also a course on our L&D platform, our learning and development platform. But if possible, from having that kind of baseline, then expanding the offering beyond this is really important. And so I think that's also when the bottom-up approach comes in too. And through events, panels, discussions, and podcasts like this one, where we often have in the past discussed very personal and vulnerable topics, I think it's really helpful to help increase awareness and for people to feel identified and represented, because it's important that employees are aware that it's safe for them to discuss mental health problems without fears of losing their job or isolation or harassment or being seen in a particular way and having that stigma. So yeah, I think that what I've mentioned and obviously having kind of that support from senior leadership, that sort of sponsorship on these initiatives is also key.
I think Danny's absolutely right with those points that she's mentioned there. And I think that companies really have a responsibility now to not only sort of support and promote casual environments, but also forums, both anonymously and also, you know, participated so that colleagues from their interaction point of view can feel that there's confidence in safe private space, and that ultimately, whether that's either anonymous or volunteer with identity, that they have an open forum for sort of sharing, discussion, and communication that can ultimately really have a positive impact on that mental well-being.
Thank you. And that brings me nicely to the third question. Because in the age of technology, how can digital platforms and social media contribute to promoting open discussions about mental health in a positive way? Mike, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I suppose the concept of digital platforms and social media has become a really interesting topic for me as an individual, simply because I have two young children and the eldest is 9 now. And so the world of social media and technology is kind of fast approaching. And I'm in this permanent mindset of how do you insulate from potentially the damaging effect that social media can play, but also harness the benefits that it can bring when it comes to creating awareness and visibility over important topics. And I think that's really important, and at the heart of it, embracing it for core components like spreading awareness is a really useful and powerful tool. So whether it's looking at core social media platforms that they will all be kind of ensconced in, or, you know, they can be powerful tools to raise awareness around mental health challenges. And they can allow both the sharing of kind of educational content, but also it can help by hearing the people which they look up to and admire and respect through other kind of social channels talking around these topics. And that can have a very powerful impact in terms of normalizing what are very difficult topics. And I think also it can create, you know, support networks as well. You know, a lot of these are kind of community-driven channels, community-driven networks, and having more and more people talking about it, sharing personal experiences, and seeking information and answers on the same topics, can again go into that topic of trying to reduce the stigma associated with a lot of this and make it more of a normalized conversation where people can have candid, open conversations around their daily struggles, which can provide, I suppose, an inspiration or also a support for others to speak up in return. So obviously, we need to be able to find a way that we can harness the benefits and manage that in a controlled environment. And obviously, overuse and misuse in turn can have a detrimental effect. But where these sort of platforms can be used responsibly, I think it's such an important and powerful asset for us to be able to utilize to create awareness, normalize, and help reduce the stigma associated with some of these important topics.
I absolutely agree. I think the responsible use of social media and content creation from the people that are creating the content is key. I think from my point of view, also the storytelling. I think when people share their personal and vulnerable stories so publicly and freely, it can have a positive impact on people who perhaps aren't so vocal with their feelings. And it will give them some perspective, not only on tips and ways to overcome it and toolkits to sort of practice habits and morning routines, but it will also let them know that they're not alone and that everyone is on some level on a mental health spectrum, because mental health is just as physical health, right? It can be good or bad, but we all have it. So the storytelling will help everyone to feel validated and feel seen.
Thank you very much. I definitely agree with the storytelling as a powerful means of connection between people. So on Time to Talk Day, what advice do you have for individuals who want to support friends or loved ones that are struggling with mental health challenges?
I think Time to Talk Day is a great opportunity to raise awareness and get us all to consider and think about how we support others that may be struggling with mental health challenges. But it's also, I think, a great reminder that this is something that we should consistently try to achieve and adopt throughout the entire year. Because it's not always obvious to us that someone may be struggling with their mental health. I think that's been demonstrated recently with some great social media campaigns on that. It's not necessarily obvious that someone is struggling, or people also, you know, can mask it and hide it well based on social constraints or that lack of confidence that they can bring their issues to other people. So from my perspective, I think the advice is that it's about reaching out. I think ultimately communication, as we've already said, that, you know, sort of modern life, social media, technology, et cetera, can get in the way. And we do minimize the sort of the real simple traits of just straightforward communication. And I think that reaching out to loved ones, friends, people we care about, people we work with, and just offering for either conversation, whether that be, you know, a phone call rather than just sending, you know, messages as we usually do, whether it's arranging to meet for a walk or grab a coffee. I think it's really about conversation and ultimately listening, you know, making someone feel like that you're thinking of them and that actually you're listening to what they're saying, listening to how they're feeling, and demonstrating that you're there to support them can really make a huge difference.
It's a really important lesson and mindset for us all to get into, especially in the workplace, right? Because I think work is a funny environment where we're thrown together with a lot of random people that we don't know a great deal about. They might not know a great deal about us. And it can be very easy to get sidetracked and have our focus put into working endeavors. And we can be focusing on targets that clients have set or internal initiatives that we're working against, the time frame to meet. And we're all doing our best. And I think sometimes we can forget the personal side of the individual that we're sat across the table with. And just simple acts, you know, at the end of those meetings, just checking in with that individual around how they are. A lot of the time we may just, you know, brush it off and say, I'm fine. The more we ask and the more we encourage that sort of dialogue, certainly with our colleagues, it can be such an important thing to do to break down those barriers of communication and encourage more openness. And it can pave the way to more vulnerable conversations between individuals who you may not have had that with before. where we can really try and get to know each other, but we can also try and support each other, because invariably we're all going to have a life and we're all going to have challenges outside of that workplace. And the more that we can do to bring more personality and a more personable approach in terms of those day-to-day interactions, I think it's such an important thing that we can all endeavor to do. And initiatives like A Time to Talk Day are exactly aimed at that. So it might be easier to do it with the people we know and love and speak to on a regular basis. But as we've highlighted so many times during this podcast, we spend so much time in those working environments that ignoring those that we are interacting with so often on a day-to-day basis, it's so important to try and encourage that open dialogue and support in that environment as well.
Thank you. And taking this conversation to a wider spectrum, how can communities come together to support mental health initiatives? And what role do local organizations play in fostering a sense of community?
As humans, we crave connection. And I think that ultimately our lives are very much governed by certain criteria, you know, the time we spend at work, time we spend at home, et cetera. But I think outside of where we probably spend the majority of our time, which is obviously in our sort of our home environment and away from work, it's good to know that there are people there who support you and can be there for you when you're struggling. And it certainly provides a sense of safety. And communities are definitely pivotal in how that can help. I think that local organizations obviously need primarily support and backing. And it starts with ourselves. We have to obviously be there to support local organization and business that we're hoping will then garner that support for people in their community. And ultimately, therefore, creating an environment in which people can share experience and create relationship and support. As an example, locally where I live, there's a pottery painting place, which is predominantly used for children and kids' parties and so forth. But they've taken up the opportunity a couple of nights a week to open late, and they actually focus on adults. And ultimately going in there, you create an environment which is for adults within a local area. They meet, paint ceramics, make new friends and connections, and ultimately have art as a release and as a commonality that is now a community vibe and spirit that sort of wouldn't have existed previously. And I think that the responsibility is on us as individuals that, you know, this isn't down to other people to take up themselves and do. This is for us to either promote, provide ideas, suggestion, and organize ourselves, and ultimately within the spaces that we live and inhabit outside of work. It's on us all to create that community spirit and that community vibe that ultimately supports and helps everybody.
Yes, I agree. I think that they can provide guidance, advice. They can create events and gatherings. Like, we as humans need community. That's part of our social aspect and being, to be seen, to be heard, to connect. Something interesting like that ties up with the local organization role and how the role they play. I often get text messages from my previous medical practice of where I used to live before, sending invites about wellness talks, classes, like free yoga sessions, and so on. And I obviously don't live around it anymore or use it. But I thought, how interesting that for someone who might not necessarily be looking for this, but might need it, they are already, just by being a client of that practice, they're receiving these text messages, inviting them to these sessions that they would not otherwise look for or know where to look. And then I think that this is great that this sort of local government or the practice or whoever's behind this is kind of taking the initiative to send the text to the patients, offer it for free. And then someone who's struggling might be like, okay, I'm going to join this and see what happens. And then they can start, you know, creating that sense of community and help to someone more in need. And I also think that organizations can create partnerships with companies and local governments to offer volunteering programs, because that would be a win-win from both sides.
Some great ideas, Danny. Thank you. In the context of open mental health discussions, how can individuals incorporate self-care practices into their daily lives for better well-being?
Yeah, this is my favorite topic. So if you're overwhelmed, I suggest try journaling. Try dumping your thoughts on a piece of paper with no expectation. Just grab a pen and a paper and just write whatever comes out. You might be surprised at how much you can learn about yourself and where this overwhelming fear or stress is coming from just by writing your thoughts on paper. I think that if you're stressed or anxious, try to do some breath work. So try to breathe, try to have a guided breath work. You can go on YouTube, you can do some Wim Hof. You can just take deep belly breaths on your by yourself, like on your own. If you feel sluggish all the time, do some exercise. It sounds the contrary, but actually exercise will give you energy. And I'm also an advocate for cold showers and ice baths and cold therapy. But if you're not into that, then do some workout. If you're unsure about a decision, close your eyes and take a deep breath and meditate for about 5 to 10 minutes and see what comes up. You'll be shocked that you'll usually have the answers within you. You don't necessarily need to go and ask someone else, but if you just take the moment to meditate on it, you will find those answers. If you struggle with copious amounts of meetings, block some time in the calendar to make sure you eat well or use that time to exercise or go out for a walk. I find that whenever I don't block time around lunchtime to actually have lunch or to do home workout if I'm working from home, I will certainly get drowned into doing something that I shouldn't be doing in that time. So blocking time is a key one. And having boundaries with your time, I think, especially your personal time. So if you've got, let's say, Teams on your phone, try to turn the notifications off on a Friday 5 p.m. and turn them on Monday 9 a.m. Like we're all been there on a Saturday on a commute checking Teams where, you know, yes, it can be efficient, but it's not healthy at the end of the day. What good are you to others and how productive can you be if you're not well with yourself first? So I think listening to your body is key here. I read this the other day. I think it was a tweet. It said, if you think everyone hates you, you probably need sleep. If you think you hate everyone, you probably need to eat.
I like that. Thank you, Dai. Some great advice there. And Grant, I'm sure you can speak to that as well.
Absolutely. There are so many things that people can do. But I think ultimately, it can really start with very, very small acts of self-care. I know it sounds very simplistic, but something as simple as making your bed every day is the starting point of just getting yourself into a routine that alleviates some of that mental angst or confusion or complication that ultimately you can simplify in your life. And I think that exercise, absolutely, eating healthy, regular meals, hydration, massively have positive impacts. And the scientific impacts have that kind of positive impact on us. We have busy lives and obviously lots of commitments, but making time for relaxation, such as breathing techniques, mindfulness and meditation, really do pay dividends. And I think that just that sort of recent surge and drive on things like such as journaling. If you look at the latest update for the Apple for, iPhone, iOS, it now includes journaling as a complimentary app. And I think that ultimately the benefits of really just structuring your day so that you do have that real work-life balance. I know we all talk about it, but what is the true art of relaxation? And it means being away from blue light, not having a TV on, not being by your phone. And really at the end of the day, trying to get out and appreciate that you've got some outside space, some sunlight in your eyes, for at least 20 minutes a day can really make significant impacts to your physical and your mental well-being.
Some great tools here. Now, in terms of educational resources that you'd recommend for individuals, do you have anything in mind in particular?
I think two really good sites that stand out for me is mentalhealth.org.uk and mind.org.uk, which are great places to start as educational resources. And it's not only necessarily about suggestions on how we can support someone else with their mental health. It's also a great source of information about different identification of your own mental well-being and certain things that I think that if you're not somebody who's able to necessarily readily communicate or you haven't necessarily spoken to other people about how you feel, you may just think that this is normality and something within yourself and how you feel and that's just the standard protocol. But ultimately, by sort of educating yourself on some of these websites, you can actually start to identify that these are links. Again, as we've said, to some of the things that you can do to help alleviate, your own mental well-being. And just by having that sort of identified through communication, you can then start to realize that there's ways to address and approach those and obviously move forwards and actually not only impact your own mental well-being, but also then to support others.
Thank you, Grant. And Mike, what would you recommend in terms of mental health education resources?
Yeah, I have to admit that up until recently, I'd never really explored what sort of educational tools or resources were available in the market. And I was first put onto this when I had a number of friends kind of doing charity fundraising events or kind of marathon training, et cetera. A lot of them are running for charities like Mind. And I had a look through the available resources that were promoted by that campaign and charity. And it's hugely impressive and important in the work that it does to be able to just provide accessible information to people to understand a little bit more, gain resources, guides, training directories. And obviously it then provides a whole other links to other things that are available. And I was probably presently surprised at just how much is available for people, whether it's kind of NHS-driven mental health services, initiatives like Time to Change, whether it's some of the mental health first aid programs that are on offer, all of which just provide that accessibility to information and just provides a broader understanding and support for mental health as a topic within the UK. Obviously, there's apps, people will recommend books and things which will have resonated or provided help and provided a level of normality to certain topics. And I think it's really important to look out for these things, as well as leveraging some of the social media channels around topics like Time to Talk that we've discussed today, because it just brings that awareness and plays a crucial role to understanding and ensuring that individuals receive the support that they need.
Thank you. And our last question, how can we ensure that these conversations, such as Time to Talk, that they continue throughout the year, not just one day in the year, but they continue throughout the year, fostering a continuous dialogue about mental health?
So we all play a role here, right? We all play a role as individuals, and the role that we can play as individuals is going to be heavily influenced by the information and what we understand. So as we've talked today, accessing content and available resources is crucial to help us gain greater empathy and understanding of the different complexities associated with mental health. But as a collective, i.e. an organization, there's a real joint effort that can be played to continue to normalize and continue the conversation beyond just a one-day-a-year promotion. So as an organization and as a set of employers, it's really a duty of care to ensure that we're fostering a supportive environment that ultimately promotes well-being and tackling work-related mental health problems. Ultimately, we have a responsibility to ensure that our managers and our role models within the organization are actively promoting and demonstrating positive well-being behaviors, challenging stigmas, but also giving the opportunity to facilitate and create opportunities to regularly discuss any of these issues. We need to ensure that we're continuing to share topics, share resources amongst ourselves, which support open conversations and provide training to managers and individuals, but also ensure that we continually strive to implement policies that ultimately prioritize mental health, because all of these are very effective strategies to provide support to all individuals who are impacted. We all benefit from that. So the employers that we work for, and ultimately the business that we are creating, all benefit from having that open, positive and supportive dialogue around this.
I think my point of view is very in line with that. I actually thought, specifically in the workplace, to have this topic on each line manager reportee meeting. So the same way that we ask, how is your month? How's your project going? Give me a work update. I mean, usually you already have a relationship, right? And you already know and trust this person and vice versa. Just adding that question afterwards or at the beginning, like making sure that as managers, we're asking, how's your mental health? Like, is there anything that you're struggling with at the moment? Is there anything that I can do both as a person or from the company point of view to support you. And I think that if we just probably implement that, that could just continue to open up those conversations. They might say, no, I'm good at the beginning. And then on, you know, month five, they'll be like, do you know what? Actually, I have this. Can you help me? What should I do? Or where should I look? So kind of having that recurrence, basically, into the topic. And that's the employer kind of work element, but in personal life, very similar, right? Asking the same to your friends, to your partners, to your kids, then people around you. And they might even ask it to you when you least expect it, right? And then you think, oh, how is my mental health, right? We're always trying to help others, but sometimes we also need that question asked to us. So it's kind of a symbiotic relationship.
Thank you, Dani. I certainly agree with that. Mental health is not a day or an event or series of events. It's a way of living every day. Thank you. And we can move on to the rapid fire questions. So let's go. So what's something that people misunderstand about you, Mike?
I am incredibly passionate about the topic of mental health, and that's driven by my own past experiences with mental health. But I suppose probably the biggest misunderstanding is, so for me, an ongoing challenge with social anxiety and ability to communicate effectively is probably one of my most significant challenges that I have to overcome on a day-to-day basis. And as someone that ultimately just talks for a living, that may come as a surprise for others, but the ongoing focus and seeking support to be able to overcome those concerns and those challenges is probably something that may not be a kind of common knowledge to everyone.
Thank you for sharing, Mike. Dani, and what is something that people will not misunderstand about you?
This one's an interesting one. Because I'm a yoga teacher and I do a lot of like spiritual and growth work to myself, I think that people always think that I have to be positive, in a good mood, always in the best headspace, basically that I'm immune to mental health issues. But I have the same pressures and stresses. So I just have a toolkit that I kind of implement. If people see me angry or like stressing or something, they're like, oh, but aren't you so, you know, yogi? And no, it doesn't work like that.
In the roles that we do, you know, we speak a lot, we attend a lot of meetings, we run governance and so forth. And I think that there is certainly an expectation. One of the things I find is that maybe misunderstood is, and what something I worked on and am working on, is something as simple as eye contact with people during conversation and meeting. It stems from confidence and that ability to have, I don't know, faith and strength in yourself. And again, is a link to mental well-being and your own sort of, you know, self-esteem. But that's something I think that probably is still a little bit misunderstood about me.
Thank you. What habits do you have to take care of your mental health?
So yoga, fitness, breath work, cold showers, gratitude journaling, and nutrition. I think that it all starts there, actually. I should have started with nutrition. It's like what you eat really affects your gut, your brain, everything in your body chemistry. And it has the potential to make you more depressed or to make you more happy.
Key habits are ultimately trying to find balance. And so when I say that, I mean making sure that I find time to connect with friends and loved ones outside of work on a regular basis, but also from a physical activity as well. So I have foolishly decided to start taking up running in the last 12 months, which has had a remarkably positive effect, which I do enjoy and find it now become more of a necessity as opposed to a luxury, but also just being outside in the fresh air. So the best thing I've had is acquiring a dog in the last 12 months, and just long dog walks, just being outside in the fresh air makes a remarkable impact to my day. And it's noticeable if I don't get the chance to do that. So spending that time outside exercising for me just brings a huge amount of joy and importance on a day-to-day basis.
For me, as everyone knows, exercise is a key part of my day-to-day, and I think that's profound on my physical and mental well-being. Health and nutrition, again, massively important, and we all, you know, have vitamins in our lives. Mine most recently would have been probably chocolate and alcohol. I've made a significant effort in recent times to reduce and give up my alcohol consumption, and it's phenomenal how much of a difference that's just made in terms of my own sort of well-being and mental state. But again, making that sort of clear definition between work commitment and home life, dedicating time that I have with my son so that I make sure that I'm completely present, not only for him, but also for myself. And I think that really with that kind of effort that you can make to create that sort of definition between the time you commit to your work and your career and the time you commit to yourself and to the people you care about around you, really can have a profound effect on how you feel about yourself and how you feel about others.
Thank you. And finally, the last question, what are the best and the worst pieces of career advice that you've ever received?
I think actually it was the exact same piece of advice from one person. I was told many, many years ago by somebody senior that I worked for that they said, don't tell people that you work with everything you know. I think that was a great piece of advice in terms of necessarily how they were viewing it to protect your career. But at the same time, I think as we look at the modern working environment, you know, and sort of collaboration and communication and how you also can mentor and manage others, I think that probably that was a good piece of advice in one context, but also a really bad piece of advice in another.
The worst piece of advice was definitely early on in my career, going through a kind of an external training session. The advice was to leave it at the door. And what they meant by that was saying, whatever was going on in your life, good, bad, or indifferent, no one in the workplace needs to see it. And I just fundamentally disagree with that, right? Like I said before, we're all thrown together in the workplace. We all want to bring our best selves to every work occasion and every work activity that we perform. But we can't ignore that there's a whole world outside of the workplace that we're all dealing with as well. And sometimes bringing all of that to the office environment can sometimes help, right? Being able to be open and honest and more vulnerable in those work situations, I think does inspire collaboration, trust, and support from your colleagues. And so it's important to bring everything that you have, good or bad or indifferent, to that occasion. You don't need to speak about it per se, but just being open and honest enough to recognize that there's other influences outside that workplace. Probably the best piece of advice I ever gave was around being comfortable to accept that you're not the smartest person in the room, and that you shouldn't be viewing that or the knowledge and experience of others as a threat. You should view that as a blessing, and having access to that information and experience from colleagues around you is a real help. We are all on a path of learning and development and continuous improvement, and we should be grateful for the exposure and opportunity to speak to others from different experiences, different backgrounds, so that we can learn from them and take those learnings forward for the betterment of ourselves.
The best one was, don't wait until you're at the top of the ladder to realize you climbed the wrong ladder. I think that really stuck with me. I think it's important that you make sure you do something that makes you happy. And if it's affecting your physical, your mental health, then maybe you need to reevaluate your options. And the bad or the worst advice, sit tight and an opportunity might present itself. I think in reality, you have to go looking for opportunities and get them. You have to be proactive. If something comes to you, great. But don't just wait and see for something to come to you. Go and take ownership and find that.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I certainly learned a lot by listening and talking with you. So thank you so much. A big thank you to Danny, Mike and Grant for taking the time to discuss these topics that are associated with Time to Talk Day and general mental health and well-being. A few points that particularly stood out for me were the self-care practices and tools that Danny, Grant and Mike covered. So for Danny, it was journaling, breath work, exercise, cult therapy, knowing that you have all the answers that you need. You just need to stop and listen. Grant talked about acts of self-care, starting with taking care of what you eat. And for Mike, it was finding balance and connecting with friends and family, as well as getting a dog. These conversations are vital to how we prioritize our well-being as colleagues and managers whilst in the workplace, both in the office and at home. Thank you for listening to this discussion. And please look out for more content from Delta Capital on our website, deltacapital.com, our LinkedIn page,
And lastly, our Instagram at delta.carpeting.